It's religion today, it's ideology today, and our secularist friends also have a faith.
Some kind of Disneyland fantasy.
I know how this is going to get heard in the secular world.
Where the pseudo-Christian masks are off.
That's nonsense, ladies and gentlemen.
Apologetics isn't just about giving answers to other people's questions. It's also about learning to question other people's answers or even question the question itself.
In a Christian worldview.
Well, welcome to Quantum number 77. I doubt you can hear it, the background noise, but it is the lovely sound of rain falling on the streets of Sydney. And apparently it's also falling on the bush areas, and there has been substantial rain. And we hope and pray that there will be much more in this drought-affected land.
Downpours on the New South Wales mid-north and south coasts, a godsend, not enough to extinguish blazes, but a big help. And into Victoria, the weather was wet and wild.
Well, this week in Quantum, we go from Taiwan to China to North Korea, Pakistan, England, Canada, America, Australia, Kenya, Northern Ireland, Scotland. We cover subjects from floods to fires. We have music from Rush to Gaelic songs. We have politics and theology. So let's get going with a very important news story coming from Taiwan.
Thousands gathered in central Taipei to celebrate Tsai Ing-wen's victory.
The people of Taiwan decline the one country, two systems model. We respect democracy and our sovereign rights. I hope this election result sends China a clear message from Taiwan's people. And I hope they can understand that the stable development of our relations comes from mutual efforts on both sides, not the responsibility of one side.
President Tsai Ing-wen has won a big victory for a four-year term on last Saturday with 57% of the vote. Her opponent, who was more friendly towards China, got 39%. Now, why is this important? Well, we've got to keep watching this because the Chinese Communist Party still maintain and have not ruled out, this is important, have not ruled out military action to take Taiwan back into mainland China. It's really quite an extraordinary result, and it's a real setback for the Chinese Communist Party, together with what's going on in Hong Kong and also the criticism that they are receiving for their treatment of the Uyghur Muslims. But not just with him. I was astounded to hear this on the BBC Radio 4 Today's programme.
Persecution. Henrietta Blyth is Chief Executive of the charity Open Doors UK and Ireland. Good morning.
Good morning.
Tell us first about China. What are the developments that are causing you concern?
China has rocketed up our world watch list over the last 2 years. They changed the religious regulations in February 2018. Xi Jinping's government seems to be concerned about the so-called westernising influence of Christianity. We've seen churches closed. We've seen pastors imprisoned. It's no longer possible to buy Bibles online. People under the age of 18 can't attend Sunday school or church. Recently, we've seen the introduction of increased surveillance equipment, including facial recognition technology.
How is that affecting Christians in China? Because we're quite familiar, or most people ought to be familiar, with how that's affecting Muslims in the western region of Xinjiang. Is it similar?
Yes. Well, Zion Church in Beijing, for example, which was one of the largest Protestant churches, was told to install surveillance equipment. They said they would install it in the corridors, but not in the main sanctuary. As a result, the landlord withdrew the rental agreement, and within months, the church was closed and the building completed.
The BBC discussing where the worst place to be a Christian is. North Korea, of course. But as you heard, China has really crept up. It is something that we need to be deeply in prayer for our Chinese brothers and sisters, because the government have perceived the Christians to be a threat. And you know this, the Christians are a threat, not necessarily to the Chinese government, but to any government which seeks to be an absolute authoritarian government that controls what we say and what we do. We, as Christians, we're never going to say Caesar is Lord. Never. And so that puts us at odds with any authoritarian state. It's why Christianity, as it flourishes, inevitably leads to more freedom and more democracy, and the suppression of Christianity goes the other way. I wrote an article about that because of a letter I saw in the Sydney Morning Herald, in which the writer said that maybe it was now time for a benevolent dictatorship. I think in the West, we don't really appreciate both the value of democracy and where it comes from. We use it as a word, but we don't understand it, and we don't really appreciate it as much as we should. It was interesting in that report, by the way, that India has come into the top 10 countries for the countries that most persecute Christians, and that's an extremely sad situation. And Myanmar as well, or Myanmar. And then, as if to rub all this home, International Christian Concern reported earlier this year that three Christian teachers from Kamuthi Primary School in Garissa, Kenya, were killed by the Somali-based terror group Al-Shabaab on January the 13th, 2020. They entered the village, they targeted the school's resource center, and they killed three of the teachers. In some places, it really does cost to be a Christian. Well, let's go from the horror of that to a different kind of, well, I don't know what to call it. It's not persecution, but just the insanity of much of Western culture, which I think will lead to persecution. And that's, we're going to Sheffield, where Sheffield University have decided to hire 20 of their own students to challenge language on campus that could be seen as racist. And if you're not familiar with the language, I don't mean racist language, but the language of the politically correct, they talk about microaggressions. Now, what are microaggressions? They're aggressions that are so small that you can't even notice them. But this is incredible. Think about what's being involved here. These are students being paid, I think it's only £9, £70, 78 per hour, to go around and listen to what other people are saying, listen into their conversations, and then correct them. Inverted commas, says the university, to have a conversation. It's to change the way people think about racism. Well, I'm sorry, but it's so idiotic that it's likely to drive people towards racism, which is absolutely horrendous. They're described as comments or actions which might be unintentional but which can cause offence to a minority group. So, statements such as, stop making everything a race issue. That's a microaggression. Why are you searching for things to be offended about? That's a microaggression. Being compared to black celebrities that I look nothing like. That's a microaggression. Now, I can think of lots of microaggressions. So, for example, if people make jokes about Christianity, or talk about redneck American evangelicals, or dare I say, talk about Dour Highland Scottish Presbyterians. Are these not all microaggressions, even macroaggressions or midiaggressions? But no, of course, this is all about virtue signaling. Racism is a real and serious problem, and it should be dealt with in a real and serious manner, not in this kind of Orwellian nonsense. And speaking of Orwellian nonsense, let's go to the continuing issue of the day, transgender. Now, there's a video that I'll put a link to where explains an American video which explains something really, really well, something I hadn't really noticed. And it's just simply this. Sex reassignment is good because it's gender affirmation. But conversion therapy is bad because it's sex reassignment. Yep, you try and work out the logic of that. But if that hurts your head, just think of this. A health charity in Birmingham, England, a gynecological charity. Now, gynecology has to do with women. I have no need of gynecology as a man, nor does any other man. We just don't. We can't bear children. We don't have wombs and vaginas and so on. And yet, this health charity has removed the word women from its description because it could be offensive or exclude trans men. Now, even if they are trans men, or do you say trans women? I just can't get my head around it all. But even if you were a man who says that he's a woman, you don't need gynecology. You just don't. To put it crudely, you just don't have the bits. And yet this charity is trying, inverted commas, to be more inclusive. And the madness of this is seen in different ways. So Pink News, which is a leading gay rights website, has put out something celebrating. Listen to this. This is from Pakistan.
Lastly, in a historic move, transgender people in Pakistan will finally get access to free healthcare. The government plans will also include covering all transition-related costs. Pakistan just said trans rights.
Okay, what are they celebrating? They're celebrating that if you're a man in Pakistan and you want to be a woman, the Pakistani Health Service will pay for you to have whatever operations you need, or vice versa. Now, why are Pink News celebrating this, and why is it inconsistent? Because homosexuality is illegal, punishable, in severe terms in Pakistan. It has been since 1860. And it's one of the reasons that transgender, by the way, gender operations in Iran and elsewhere were so popular, because if you are a man who says that you are attracted to other men, then it must be because you're a woman, so you should have an operation. Ironically, Pink News are supporting something which is fundamentally anti-homosexual. Let me put it this way. If it was a conservative Christian evangelical who was suggesting that men who are gay should have an operation to cure their gayness, can you imagine the outrage? But because it comes under the term trans, Pink News are going, yay, we celebrate it. In all this, let me offer some things of hope. Now, this may seem a strange kind of hope. It's to do with this gentleman that we're going to listen to, who actually just died. And saying hope comes out of something who just died. Let me explain. But first of all, let's just hear a few words from Sir Roger Scruton.
At any time between 1750 and 1930, if you had asked educated people to describe the aim of poetry, art, or music, they would have replied beauty.
And if you had asked for the point of that, you would have learned that beauty is a value as important as truth and goodness. Then, in the 20th century, beauty stopped being important. Art increasingly aimed to disturb and to break moral taboos. It was not beauty, but originality, however achieved and at whatever moral cost, that won the prizes.
Now, Roger Scruton is a philosopher, was a philosopher, died this week, brilliant in so many ways, but especially his work on beauty. That's the bit that we listened to just then. And I would strongly, strongly suggest watching the whole video on Vimeo. I found his treatise, if you like, absolutely compelling. Beauty used to be considered a virtue along with truth and goodness and love. And in the 20th century, beauty was largely removed as a virtue and has been replaced by ugliness. Scruton was particularly concerned about ugliness in architecture, but ugliness in other ways, ugliness in human behavior. And I do think from a Christian perspective that that really is what the gospel is all about. It's about giving beauty for ashes. It's about restoring beauty in an ugly world. It's about the beauty of Christ. And what encourages me about Scruton is that although he was vilified, although he was demonized, although especially in the last year of his life, he was treated appallingly by the liberal progressive establishment, yet his words resonated to many people. And I do believe that he's a sign of a straw in the wind. That's Rush, Tom Sawyer. Rush are a Canadian band, prog rock, I guess people called it. I used to laugh because there was a group of guys in my church back in Dundee in St. Peter's who said that they wanted to start a Rush tribute band, which would have been fascinating. Well, sadly, there's the death of Neil Peart, their drummer, who is a remarkable, remarkable drummer. I found, however, his comments posted on Pathos quite sad, in which he kind of mocked Christianity and didn't see what was going to happen. He had apparently no sense of eternity. It was interesting that atheist groups were very quick to claim him for their own, but he corrected them and said, no, he was an agnostic. But, you know, those two deaths, Scruton when he sees beauty, and Neil from Rush, he sees nothing really. I kind of think that sums up where we are and what we're trying to do. And if you're listening to this and you don't know Christ, I urge you to seek beauty that lasts and is eternal. Well, let's go to the United Kingdom. And another sign of hope for me, some of the new members of Parliament, not least Carla Lockhart from Northern Ireland. Listen to her speech here.
I feel it is imperative that I speak on this to attempt again to highlight the anger, disappointment and frustration concerning the change in abortion laws that have been foisted upon the people of Northern Ireland. These changes came in the most roughshod way, with complete contempt for the devolved administration or the views of the people of Northern Ireland. Mm-hmm. So I want today to make the point to this House on behalf of the many thousands of people across Northern Ireland who take a pro-life stance that we want to repeal Section 9 with immediate effect and allow for the Northern Ireland Assembly to debate, discuss and evidence gather on this emotive issue. The Secretary of State has not intervened to assist in our crumbling healthcare system or to fairly reward our healthcare workers or to avert the mental health crisis we are facing. He hasn't done that because, in his own words, he said these are devolved issues. Abortion was and should be a devolved matter, yet this House has imposed on Northern Ireland the most extreme measures of abortion anywhere across Europe. Mm-hmm. Northern Ireland has been a country that has always supported life-affirming laws. Back in 1967, our politicians said no to the 67 Abortion Act, and according to research conducted by Both Lives Matters, 100,000 people are alive today. England and Wales back then did support the Act, and as a result, over 8 million babies have been aborted.
I thought her speech was wonderful. I think it's great to have someone in Parliament speaking up for the weakest and most vulnerable members of society, the unborn. And I think all of us should reflect on the truth that because of Northern Ireland's abortion laws, 100,000 Northern Irish people are alive today. The Westminster Parliament, including the SNP and the Conservatives and Labour, have not sought fit to interfere in devolved measures in another country, except for this one issue on abortion. And it shows the fanaticism and the irrationality of the fundamentalist progressives. Let's come back to Australia and let's think about the disasters here. And I've been thinking about this a lot in terms of the fires. And one of the things I've noticed is more openness amongst many people to listen to the claims of the gospel. And listen to what Sinclair Ferguson has to say about this.
You know, the most important prayer is that whatever the providences of God may be, he will use them to turn people to Christ. And it's wholly appropriate that we should pray that God would turn back the fires. But beyond that, our concern is for God's glory. And if that means that people are going to be awakened to think about eternal things when they've been consumed with the things of this world, then we pray that God will. And, you know, I think we believe that God will use these things, make people think about what really matters, what really lasts. In fact, it's very often at such times that you'll hear people say in response to what they have lost that it's really made them treasure the things that are really important.
You know, it really does make people think about what really matters. We're right to pray for the fires to stop. But there's a deeper and more important prayer that God would open people's eyes to what's going on. And here's another story. If you get a chance, listen to this documentary on the BBC, radio documentary, about Fish Lake, where there was enormous flooding in early December of last year, and how the community came together and how the church itself played a key role. And that's something that I hope the church will always be able to do in terms of these natural disasters. And then there's a politician, again, just giving me a huge amount of hope, John Anderson, who had kind of retired to his farm. He was the Australian Vice Premier at one point. But he's come back into political life in a way, at least into cultural life, by interviewing people and putting out some absolutely marvellous video interviews. And one of these is with Doug Murray. And Doug Murray had some really interesting things to say about Australia, which I think are also pertinent elsewhere. Listen to this.
I was in Australia last summer, and I was very struck. I did a multiple city tour. I was very struck by the fact that I thought I have relied, and I'm sure this happens the other way around, I've relied in recent years on the assumption that your average Australian retains a common sense that is perhaps absent from the average American these days, not to mention perhaps the average Brit. That there was some core of
we haven't got
sense.
Quite as far down the road, yeah. Is the way we would normally put it.
And while that may be true for many people, I was very struck in city after city in Australia and in New Zealand that what I describe in the madness of crowds was at its absolute heart in your country.
Yeah.
I've been trying to work out, because I wrote a little bit about Australia in my previous book, The Strange Death of Europe, as well, as you know, about the immigration question, and specifically on the historical guilt issues. And it seems to me, among other things, that, and I would love you to correct me on this, but it seems to me, among other things, that Australia has had a massive shift in its sense of itself in your lifetime.
Yep.
And that, as a result, it's
huge.
Become very vulnerable huge. To this
yes,
sort
it
of...
It has. I agree with that.
Right.
And another man who'd agree with both of us is Frank Ferrutti. Now, he would not...
Now, I agree. I found in Australia there's still a lot more common sense than in most of the rest of the Western world. But I also agree with Doug Murray that in certain areas, so what I would say, the academic establishment, the media establishments in Melbourne and in Sydney and in Brisbane, that in these areas, they're as manically liberal progressive as anywhere else in the world. And it's possible that in Australia, the pushback against that, which has begun, will not be too late, as I fear it is in the UK. But we shall see. But I loved what Murray said there, that, and I think this is so true, this has arisen out of a massive shift in a sense of itself. And I think that's true of the US. I think that's true of the UK. We don't know who we are anymore. And all this is, there's this issue of identity that's tied in with the whole gender, personal issues. But there's a collective lack of a sense of identity. Who are we if we're not a Christian nation, if we're not founded on Judeo-Christian principles, if all the things that we have believed up till now are to be turned upside down, who actually are we? And I do think there are things like a sense of guilt and everything else that comes in. So well done to John Anderson. Well done to Doug Murray, who if I haven't said it before, I'll say it again, get The Madness of Crowds. Just a phenomenal book. Let me leave you with a little, another little bit of music as we play out, just listening to this. This is my favourite Catholic Scottish composer, Sir James Macmillan. Actually, he's my favourite Scottish composer, and to be honest, he's probably my favourite composer, a living composer anyway. He has, together with the King's Singers, come up with this arrangement of... Now, I'm sure I've got the Gaelic wrong, so all you Gaelic speakers, of whom there are many listening to this, forgive me. O Chichi Mina Morbihena. It's a Gaelic song. It's such a beautiful song. It was written by a man called John Cameron, who was moved because of the clearances, and he sang this song to remind himself and others of the beautiful homeland that they left. I'm not joking, actually, when I listened to it, earlier this week, when I heard it, I just started crying. It's, you know, songs of home almost. And I leave you with this quote. If you want, by the way, to support Quantum, you can go to the Podbean and do that. And by the way, please do feel free to share it. Last week, I think we had the highest number of listeners we've ever had, and again from all over the world, so that's great. And wherever you are, may God bless you. But let me leave you with this quote from Roger Scruton, who wrote in a diary in The Spectator just before he died. He wrote about December of this year. During this year, much was taken from me. My reputation, my standing as a public intellectual, my position in the conservative movement, my peace of mind, my health. But much more was given back. By Douglas Murray's generous defence, by the friends who rallied behind him, by the rheumatologist who saved my life, and by the doctor to whose care I am now entrusted. Falling to the bottom in my own country, I've been raised to the top elsewhere, and looking back over the sequence of events, I can only be glad that I've lived long enough to see this happen. And this is the phrase: coming close to death, you begin to know what life means, and what it means is good attitude. We have many reasons to be grateful to God. Not least, I hear the sound of the rain. Not least, the fact that I am breathing. Not least, that we have many, many different blessings. Listen to what Scruton says. What life means is gratitude. May God bless you. See you next week.